Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Oh, Retonya, Retonya, Bombayo. I apologize. Hello. Welcome to another spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray. Oh, it's a lonely one this time, Jamie. It's just me, Richard. Hello. And you, Jamie.
Yes, hello.
You suggested this week we should do Rensonia, and this is how many people turned up to have a chat about it. No, people have their excuses. We're unfortunate, and well, are they unfortunate? They didn't get to do this one. They sort of blessed, really.
Two people turned up to watch it just like when it was released in 1985.
So, just for clarity, Jamie, please give the details of Red Sonja from 1985.
Red Sonja is from 1985. It's directed or was directed by Richard Fleischer, based on not a specific book, but based on characters created by Robert E. Howard, who was the creator of the whole Conan the Barbarian universe. It stars Bridget Nielsen in her first film, Arnold Schwarzenegger, kind of by accident, Paul L. Smith, Ernie Reyes Jr., Pat Roach, who people probably recognize as the giant mechanic from Raiders of the Lost Ark, who gets cut up in the propeller of the
Is
plane.
he also in Alfreda Saint Pet?
Maybe? I don't know.
If Abby was here, she'd know.
I mean, he was British dead now, but he was a British, I think, wrestler before he became a stuntman and an actor. Anyway, he only. Oh, it also stars Ronald Lacey, also from Raiders of the Lost Ark, who most people would know as Tot, the German Nazi officer who's dressed all in black and has the kind of froggy face and has the medallion burn on his hand.
I thought for a minute, do you know, like the Emperor Asian kid in this. I thought for a minute he was the annoying Asian kid from one of the Indiana Jones films as well, but he's not, is
No,
he?
but there is something very similar about those characters. But Ernie Reyes Jr. has been in a bunch of stuff since then. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze.
He
he was
was the
there,
ooze.
like, yeah. But
Do you
yeah, this
reckon
film.
the Ghostbusters also had to deal with that same problem? Do those films cross over, Ghostbusters 2 and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2? They're both from New York, aren't they?
Yeah, but like, I feel like the Ghostbusters would be trying to trap the Ninja Turtles because they are effectively monsters.
Oh yeah, they're like, hanging out eating pizza with Slimo, wouldn't they, in the thing?
Yeah,
Anyway, this
anyway.
is neither
Yeah,
here nor
this
there.
is, okay, so this is the primary problem with this film. Just as the plot summary on IMDb, seeking revenge, a fiery red-headed female warrior sets out to retrieve a magic orb from an evil queen whose loyal warriors raped her and murdered her entire family.
Oh,
She finds unlikely allies along the way, and
doesn't sound that bad. What are you talking about? It's in the
I mean,
execution, mate. It's all in the
yeah,
execution.
that's the problem.
Yeah, but you're contesting. The problem is the very premise is sleepworthy. But
Oh,
actually.
no, the premise is fine. It's just thinking back about the film, I was starting to fall asleep already.
I was watching this late at night and I did nearly fall asleep. I had to have a pee break and sort of slap myself around. But
It's an hour and 29 minutes, not even an hour and a half.
and it's I think it could have I mean, we will talk expectations, but I think the first thing that you prompted me to think about is how the film opens with a kind of lady glowing ghost thing giving an exposition dump as to what's happened to Red Sonja, whereas they could have
Yeah.
probably shown the raping, the pillaging, and
I think, well,
giving her a backstory.
they show some clips, and I feel like I saw maybe in the IMDb trivia that those scenes were originally supposed to be the start of the film, but they ended up like cutting it for a shorter run-in time. And I do kind of appreciate that, although I don't know if I like or dislike how simple the plot is.
Yeah, it's not, but then, right, okay, so this came off of the back of the success of Conan the Barbarian and Conan the Destroyer. Yeah. So did you put Red Sonja up for discussion because you like Conan, or like what was the reason?
I like the first Conan the Barbarian. Golden. Conan, yeah. Golden. Yeah.
Look, we are running. It's got the best comment.
I like the first one. But the weird thing about the Conan series is it's very famous, but there's only one good one. Because the sequel, Conan the Destroyer, is absolute shit. And that was actually directed by the same guy who did Red Sonja. But, yeah, Conan was very, you know, it was big in the 80s in particular. There was remake that Conan, nobody cared about.
Yeah, Conan the Barbarian, the Arnold Schwarzenegger classic E1. Like, it's not like it's an amazing film. It's just, like, it's fun, it's schlocky. It's
the
kind
tone
of what...
Is,
it's
the tone is exactly right.
The topic material, yeah. There's and a lot it's of practical effects and sets that are really well done. And Arnie is kind of compelling, despite his dodgy accent and stuff.
It's a, you know, it's a stupid and kind of exploitative film, but it's taken from a very, it's done with a sort of passion and an enjoyment. You can tell everybody's fully invested in Conan the Barbarian, and then Conan the Destroyer, it was an attempt to make it more of a PG general audience thing. So it kind of takes away a lot of what makes the original fun in how over the top it is, and it very much like it flattens it out. And then Red Sonja is just kind of a continuation of that. The reason I wanted to see Red Sonja is it always comes up whenever people talk about the 80s Conan films. And I, cause Arnold is in it, I always assumed he was Conan in this too. And it was a same universe side sequel.
Yeah, I saw Red Sonja a while ago, and I kind of remember it as like, oh, obviously it must have been Arnie playing Conan, but no, it's a man in burnt red trousers and top and
little
head thingy.
He is Conan. Like,
sort of, may as well be, yeah.
Yeah, like in name only, he's not Conan.
Why do you think they didn't do that? Is it just because that's not cheesy? Like, is Conan must occasionally be in the Red Sonja stories and stuff?
Yeah, I actually think again, at least according to IMDb, Red Sonja isn't specifically linked to Conan. She just has her own stories and stuff.
But basically, she's the female Conan. That's the whole, like, that's all on paper. It's just literally muscle barbarian man, you know, swings his sword to victory. Like, he just basically kills things, evildoers, and people, and rapes and pillages his way to success. Because he's the classic muscly barbarian success story. And Sonya's, like, the same. Supposedly, I assumed.
Yeah, all of this is what, you know, the fantasy genre was before Lord of the Rings came along in the early 2000s and actually made it a big, viable genre.
Yeah, it's like where D&D crosses over with muscle porn, isn't it, really? It's like, oh,
yeah.
I like the idea of claving people in twain, and I like the idea of oiling up someone with big muscles and fucking them. Like, it's a little bit too sexual, isn't it? Like,
at least
Lord of the Rings doesn't get very... Well, it does get a bit homoerotic, but not in an aggressive way.
It also depends if you ever, you know, venture into the fan fiction. But
that's the danger zone any time, isn't it, in any genre.
But there was a lot of this... Back in, I mean, it's pre-80s when you talk about the actual books, but then the 80s seemed to be when movie producers started to look at books like the Conan series and Gore, which is a really fucking weird one. And the books are always pervier than the films. But the first Conan the Barbarian retained some of that perviness, and it's what makes it like ridiculous and sort of more fun to watch. It's when you take that and try and make it sort of family friendly, you realize that when it's not ridiculously over the top. It's just kind of dull.
Yeah, there's a reason when adventure fantasy movies have quest-based stories.
Yeah.
They usually have a barbarian amongst like other like thieves and wizards and archers and things. They put them in a band of merry men because alone it's just, you know, an erection with a sword going around for ages. It's too much. It's too, like, it is too overtly aggressive and sexual to just have a story about a half-naked muscle man killing people because of reasons.
I feel like there's an element here as well of, you know, the 80s wasn't exactly known for being the most progressive in terms of popular culture. And I
there's nothing wrong with saying, oh, Conan was popular, let's do a lady version, because either men want to watch ladies or ladies want to have a hero themselves, you know, ideas can work.
I feel like this came up, you know, this was around the time people were starting to become aware of the idea that women were also people and not, it wasn't just men, and like, but it, you know, it wasn't flourishing yet, and somebody did have, you know, the very modern idea of, hey, what if we make Conan but for girls? And you know, the producers, Dino De Laurentiis or whatever, was like, yeah, and then she could just, we'll dress her like Conan, so she walks out with her tits out holding a sword all the time. And then someone else went, no, we should probably make it PG. And then everyone just lost interest, and like, because it's PG and no one's getting their tits out, they slashed the budget as well.
Yeah,
like,
exactly, yeah.
Like, there's a lot less effort going into this than there was in the Conan one. And it's either because they weren't allowed to be overtly sexual, or because they were like, well, yeah, it's girl Conan, we don't have to put as much effort into this one. Like, which is a shame, because while I was watching it, I was kind of thinking about more, you know, more of the sort of modern women-led action movies that
What's the
have...
TV series about a female barbarian lady that was very popular? What's that called?
Xena Warrior Princess?
Xena Warrior Princess. Did you ever watch that?
Like, off and on.
I didn't myself, but it was... I could see why people would be into it. I don't know if it was legitimately enjoyable or if it was a bit just nerds having something to think about.
No, it was done very tongue in cheek. I think more so than people realized at the time, because it was part of that Hercules TV universe, and it was produced by Sam Raimi and Rob Tapert, so it had that kind of
knowing what it was doing kind of vibe, yeah.
And it did, you know, it made Lucy Lawless a star, and she's great in Ash vs. Evil Dead, but but like, thinking about modern female-led action stuff from, you know, you had the new Mad Max, you have things like Atomic Blonde, things where it's taken more seriously now.
You can have your female lead, and you can have them be slightly titillating sometimes, but they're characters and they're strong women achieving something. They're not just an excuse to see boobies flop about or muscly chicks swing swords, you know?
I felt like this is one of those films that, you know, people always complain about remakes, and I'm not that... I don't have that much of a problem with remakes, but I also think, why don't they do this again?
You can't fail to do better, can you? I mean, okay, I would say, as the film was unfolding, I mean, the first bit is just kind of like, why is a glowing woman explaining the backstory?
Yeah,
can't we be shown the backstory?
I like the glowing ghost woman that turns up to give her a purpose just vanishes forever.
It's like, it almost felt like an Arthurian myth like character. There's like, you know, she taps her on the shoulder with a glowing sword, and you think, oh, she's going to get a magical sword. And then it's like, not till later on, where some peculiarly dressed person, but everyone is peculiarly dressed in this. But yeah, like, she gets her special sword. She's like in a room full of weapons, and her, like, I don't know, sensei master type dude.
Yeah, she trains with these uncomfortable Asian stereotype characters.
Uncomfortable because they're dressed badly, or because they're stereotypes?
Because I feel like they were, their direction they were given was, can you be more Asian? Like, And then they were dressed, the actual master or sensei or whatever's outfit is fucking phenomenal.
It's like, I know it's the 80s and shoulder pads were big, but my god, it's like, it's got like a wingspan of like flags or something. He's got like, what's he got, like banners it's on like, his shoulders or
yeah,
something?
It's like he had his, it's like he had that outfit up on one of those rotary triangular washing lines.
Yeah.
And then put it all on without taking it all off the washing line.
It's all
splayed out in a million different directions. And I think while she's training and then she walks off with him and I'm like, how are you even standing that close to him?
What did you teach her? Like how to not stab about three people with your shoulder pads while throwing your sword around? Like,
it's also, yeah, she's training. So this is presumably a few years after what happened.
There's a lot of I don't know what happened, but we could assume from what, like, there's a lot of something happened. We don't really know who these people are or what they're doing, but something went on, and we vaguely understand.
This evil queen who's after this. Is it called the? No, is it the talisman? It's like that glowing green.
It's called a talisman of some kind. Yeah. It's a special magic green thing
that all these priestesses are sealing away because it's too powerful or something, and then this queen is like, I'll have it.
It's a weird plot, sure.
It's simple, but there's also a lot going on somehow.
It feels like there's a lot to explain, they just didn't. They literally go, like, I mean, sure, she gets her magical sword, which I was just going to talk about, was a room full of weapons, and then just one of them goes, "Ooh, oi, pick me! You dumb redhead!"
She pulls out the master sword from the stone,
and then boom! But who is this? We mentioned this weird Asian chap, and he has some other. I mean, everyone is dressed with fucking weird headgear and odd clothes. And I almost commend how many helmet designs they had to come up with.
I was impressed by genuinely impressed by the costume design throughout the whole film.
They're all different.
Yeah.
And headpieces and gear and weird clothes. And they're all, like, really
awful.
They're
really horrible.
They're terrible. But there's so many different variations.
I know.
Fucking hell is that?
And they're so well made.
And so impractical. And they're
ugly.
All bizarre. And they all look like they could be in any number of those, like, what's that game people play? Is it? It's not Dungeons & Dragons. That the Games Workshop, where they, like, have little things on a table.
Warhammer. Yeah.
They all could be on Warhammer characters. But they don't make any sense. Like, everyone is wearing some variation on a weird, what is that kind of fucking, what is sticking out of your head helmets? I don't know if it's ribbons or crowbars or skulls or shiny bits. Like, and everyone, every single person in this at some point wears a stupid piece of headgear. It's very, like, and it's like, well done, but also, couldn't you have made them nice?
Yeah, they put so much effort into these horrible clothes.
It's like all the designs for weird sites, like, oh, Flash Gordon already did that kind of thing, or Conan already did that one. We'll have to come up with something else, and all that was left was bad ideas.
It does, it has a sort of visual, it shares something of a visual style with Flash Gordon, as well as things like the previous Conan films. Like, there's an odd mix in there. It's weird how it clashes with itself. Because the set design, some of it, is really cool. But then when they get close up, you can very, very clearly see that it's all styrofoam. Really lightweight. Like, the bit where she meets the prince, or the king.
Yeah,
Eddie Reyes Jr.'s character, and he's on that big stone hand.
Yeah, I mean, it looked. There's so many parts that you've already mentioned that I want to talk about, but like unless we talk about just the set design, I was really impressed with the effort that had gone into from the art department. You already got like a team of people making interesting fashion items. They don't make sense. They don't always look nice. But they're elaborate, and that's better to be interesting and elaborate and different than underwhelming and boring and shit. So well done, costume department. I also feel a little sick, but well done. But then the set design, there's so many quite elaborate sets and like some quite nice map paintings and nice ideas, even if they're not, you know, even if they do look a bit styrofoam at times. It's like you got some really good designers and you said you could only use material from like Halloween costume shops.
Yeah.
And just go to a fancy dress costume shop, get all the props there.
Everything's been fucking blue petered together.
But it's by some really creative people. Like, I really did quite like the sets they had. I felt, in a way, the money they spent on sets, even, and it's nice to see big practical sets. They look a bit cheap at times, but it's nice that they put so much effort, the art department, into this stuff. It's like they squandered it by not doing, you know, more takes of lines. Like, it's literally stand on the mark, say the dialogue, one take's enough. Move on.
And I mean,
don't do any. There's no acting, directing going on in this film at all.
Having a first time Bridget Nielsen in the lead, sharing that lead with a mid 80s star is on the rise, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I mean, this is a second language English man who, you know, but like Arnie, as this character who's basically Conan. It's fine to have one person who sounds a bit foreign, or is maybe like the idea with Conan is like he's a slab of meat hero. He's not like he's not a thinky guy. He's not full of interesting words. You know, he is basic, and then therefore the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger is in his second language trying to articulate lines that are basic. They're like strong, basic. You know. Fuck you, Crom. To hell with you if you don't help me. You know, just doing the simple barbaric lines, that works. So there's something to be said for having someone who can't, you know, isn't first language English.
Yeah, and it fits with the character of Conan, and it kind of fits here too. It's more of a, well, we have Arnie here, for, you know.
Yeah. But like having two. Second language English, because
yeah, I mean, I think Bridget Nielsen was
what was going on
is, and I think she was a model.
Well, you know, I mean, just the problem is when she speaks, you go, and now that you've learned how to say the words, could you want to put some emotion into them?
Yeah, or, she's from Denmark. Like,
She's Danish, and I mean, it doesn't matter that they're from somewhere else, but whatever they say, they need to say with some kind of sense, like they know what they're saying. Every time she spoke, it's doesn't know what that means or something, you know?
Yes, there were definitely a couple of line reads where, like, the inflection's in the wrong place, and they just went, "Yep, that'll do. Come on."
You said the words. That is a check for me. How it felt every time. I mean, they had not just Bridget, but like some of the other characters. It was just like, did we not? There was literally no attempt to act. Everyone was just if they'd said their words as written in the script, that was a success. That's what they decided, and that would do. And quite frankly, that's not good enough. That was the main thing. It was just like, why the fuck is no one able to say a line convincingly?
It's something when the 8 or 9 year old.
Is the best child actor.
Is, yeah. Yes. Although, I will say, I can't remember his name, Richard Lacey, the guy who plays Ecole, guy who's like the Queen's second in command. The one
like from the henchman. They called Spider at some point, didn't they?
Fucking puppet.
The spider puppet. I liked the spider puppet. Did you not like that creepy giant spider pet that the Queen had?
No, because it was clearly fixed to the floor and being turned around as its legs just flopped.
But you don't see little comedy pet spiders. Spiders are always huge, massive, scary things that people fight in a cave. They're just tiny little creepy things. They're never just fun, like Jim Henson-style puppets.
That's an insult to Jim Henson for a start. But I like that when she pets it, she goes, "Aw."
I think I like the spider. I like an evil queen with a giant pet spider. That's fun. That was something good about it, I reckon.
I liked how shit it looked. Like, I just liked how crap that was, but it didn't go anywhere. But Ronald Lacey as Ecole is the other one who really does sort of go for it as his. Yeah. Also, him getting crushed in that stone door was fucking fantastic.
I did. It was a bit you know, come on, mate, roll away. But well, don't get squished, mate. Come on, roll. It was roll out the way. But no, it's cool enough.
It was one of those things that a lot of films like this, and even when they would be, you know, PG. This is post Raiders of the Lost Ark, so PG is really getting pushed in terms of comical and brutal violence.
To the point where they actually put blood on the blade occasionally. Not enough. There was never enough blood, considering people are having limbs and heads hacked off. They dared to put, you know, a bit of blood on the sword occasionally.
Yeah. But, I mean, for that actor, he's already had his face melted. Yeah. So getting, you know, crushed under a big stone wheel. It's also, there's some pretty good beheadings in this. I like that
they're
it has that effect. Yes, because apparently when you slash someone's head off with a sword, their head, yes, directly up into the air.
Yeah. Well, let's rewind back a bit here, because, you know, I would say the plus, in the plus column, a fuck ton of lovely hats. Crazy helmets, whether they're aesthetically pleasing or not, they tick a spoiler-filled film conversation box for us, right? We all like to stare at funny hats, and we got loads of them. So thank you. Also, you know, creativity on the set design. And, like, you know, there's some decent matte painting. And I liked some, like, there was a few things that felt like they were just Mortal Kombat, like, arenas. So like, well, that's fun, right? That's, like, you know, that's pre-Mortal Kombat as well, so.
There's, speaking of matte paintings, there was one that stood out that I did really like. And it was very obviously fake, but it was that sort of really just fun to look at, clearly a matte painting background, and it was the giant skeleton bridge.
Yeah, I loved great. It, and you're right, it looked the most like a matte painting. Some of the other ones were like blended a little better. I'd just go, so in Red Sonja's universe, are there giant, really giant cows or bulls?
Yeah, you don't know. Like, yeah,
it's a giant land-based monster that either died awkwardly, like 127 hours happen where it got a hoof stuck in a wall and it just happened to die and form a bridge, or did like Isambard Kingdom Brunel of the Red Sonja universe come and construct a big massive alien cow bridge? How did that monster become a bridge?
Yeah, it does. There's something to the design of the It's less the interiors and it's more the exteriors, where they put these giant crumbled statues and things in, and they're always in the background or in the distance, but it's sort of it that appeals to me in this idea that this is still a clearly very ancient place.
They're
but also there's something
build,
even
they?
Yeah, and it's doing it in the way that I like, where it's always, it's just in the background and there's no it sort of hints that there were previous civilizations that did bigger stuff. It reminds me of the game Shadow of the Colossus, where you're just
this is
lone
a boss that
person.
Has died and he's been made into a bridge.
Yeah.
Speaking of Shadow of the Colossus, there are scenes where you get Red Sonja riding a horse through epic vistas, and also Arnie, I think, is like there's a lot of horse riding. They've picked some real life locations that aren't, you know, full of like styrofoam statues and whatnot.
Yeah, I think
you know,
mostly,
it's still nice places, isn't it?
I think it's mostly Italy. It was filmed in.
But like they're going for an aesthetic, and they're creating a visual, you know, setting that is kind of compelling. It's a little bit like, oh, in the world of Red Sonja, there's not just humans, but we're not quite sure like, to what extent there are.
There's not just humans, but we can't afford to have actual monsters.
Or like when the Emperor comes into the story, his like the magical green medallion thing or talisman that can create storms, and his city has been destroyed, but all that remains is like a concrete hand of a statue, the emperor, and a fat servant guy. And it's like, well, there's no sense that there's any more people going to be in this film in terms of background characters or something.
His kingdom was a little bare in terms of.
We'll assume he's right and not just a mad child. Yeah, there's a lot of implied Yeah, so there would be a lot of people in this, but obviously, fuck it, we're not going to actually put people in a location very often.
Once again, it's the producers in 1985 also saying, but this is the Conan for girls, so we don't have to put that much money or effort into it.
Yeah, but, you know, there's how set up a marketplace and have a few desolated corpses and upset people, not just all we have is the Emperor and his servant, one servant, and he's still pretty... Yeah. Like, the kid is very confident and very proud as an emperor. And that kind of works. Like, there's a lot of... There were a lot of young emperors in Asian history. And I like the idea of a confident young emperor who is surprised when people address him like a normal person.
But
he has no empire in the film that we see.
Yeah. Well, whenever he first stood up, and this is... not Eddie Reyes Jr., Ernie Reyes Jr., as Prince Tarn. And when he first appears, you know, he's very obviously supposed to be a little shit anyway.
Yeah.
So, but it's hard to deal sometimes with a very young child actor, because he looks about 8 or 9, who is being grating on purpose, because that's really fucking annoying.
Yeah.
But after a while, like when he turns back up again, when they've been attacked by bandits or whatever... He started, and him and his relationship with his servant,
Falcon?
Falcon.
Not spelt like the bird. It's a bit weird, but he's called Falcon. They're weird. It's Red Sonja. People got funny names.
Played by Paul Smith.
Who plays Bluto in the Popeye film, which I found out, and I was like, oh, he doesn't have the beard, but yes, oh my god, Bluto. And it's probably the second film he's been in where he eats a big... on the bone piece of meat.
Oh, fuck, you just reminded me of his very lightweight bone weapon that he carries around.
Oh, God, yeah.
But after a while, him and the kid and their relationship did start to grow on me. And I was kind of shocked at, like, I'm actually kind of starting to be more okay with the kid than I am with any of the other characters.
On paper you'd be like, fuck, an annoying kid character, but he's genuinely the best actor on the screen.
I was going to say, he's less annoying than Short Round in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Oh yeah, big time. And the important thing is, he's meant to be annoying, and he's meant to cut, like, he slowly, through Red Sonja being a bit like... Like she doesn't put up with his shit, basically, and she trains him... There's a token attempt to train him how to be a sword fighter. And, you know, she treats him as a young boy instead of an emperor. And that sort of makes him, you know, come round to being more...
Yeah,
exactly. He grows up a bit. And he's also quite proactive and helpful. Like, he's not just a child. He is another warrior, in a sense. He's used to fight bad guys as well.
That's what I was going to say. Whenever he actually busted out his sword and started doing all his shit with it, I was genuinely impressed at this fucking 8-year-old actor's skill with an actual, well, actual, but like a prop sword. Like, he could do all the fucking, you know, martial arts, like swinging the sword around, like properly dangerous. That kid would be dangerous.
Yeah, you bought him as, you know, an actual threat, which is, it's a hard sell to expect a child to be able to fend off a bunch of human and, like, barbarian baddies, but he does in the film, and you kind of go, oh, well, this is kind of fun now. I'm enjoying the kid learning and changing and being kinder to his servant as time goes by. And there's even, like, the servant you feel sorry for initially because he's just treated like shit. And then you go, oh, he's loyal to him, and there is a slight respect from the emperor. So
there's a moment in that bandit scene, whenever she saves them, where the kid does some full-on fucking Bruce Lee to one of the bandits. And either Ernie Reyes Jr., from a very young age, was exceptionally good at pulling his kicks and punches perfectly to make it look genuine, or he kicked the stuntman full on in the face. But either way, it was impressive.
Yeah. Well, this is the odd thing about Red Sonja, is the best thing in it is the character of an emperor, but also the actor playing him. They're both, like, it's an interesting enough character. And he's not just a hindrance to the characters. He's proactive in the story. He's legitimately one of the adventurers going on the quest. And he's got sometimes it's a bit weird because, like, he's in it for no reason initially, and then he's a part of the team. But they're all together just because, why not? There's lots of, they're together.
I mean, it's also part of that, what would you call it? Like, that 80s fantasy, actually, in particular, because, like, the Conan films, this, Krull, like, it's always a band of people, you know, misfits come together to do a thing, which it's very, very typical of the genre, because you kind of can't do it any other way.
Well, that's how Dungeons and Dragons works, because people are together in a basement playing games, and you are, like, that's the nature. Like, I don't have any problem necessarily with a bunch of different characters coming together. I mean, there's not a huge amount of motivation. They're all hard done by the Evil Queen, I guess, is the reason. They've all got stakes in it, but it doesn't really matter if they're fully motivated or not. That's how these things work, isn't it?
Yeah. Interesting side note about Ernie Reyes Jr. I don't remember if this has come up before, like in an actual recorded episode, if we've talked about the Uncharted games.
We might have mentioned them. I don't know.
Yeah. They recently, or like a few weeks ago from now, but this year there was an Uncharted fan film that actually had Nathan Fillion in it as Nathan Drake, who was the fan favourite, were they to ever make a film.
Sure.
Ernie Reyes Jr. was in that fan film as a character called El Tigre, or presumably El Tigre. I haven't watched it because I don't know if I could deal with it, because I'm really against the idea of any sort of live-action version of Uncharted. They're already fucking films.
Yeah, it's just, like they've ripped off existing things and they do have fun gameplay moments.
But it's just, I'm glad he's still working, just because I was so unexpectedly impressed by him in this film. And it might be because the rest of the film, apart from the costumes and the set design, is very dull.
Well, that's where we run out of praise, I'm afraid. The kid is good, the relationship he has with his servant, and even with Red Sonja and Arnie and things, that works, that's fine. And then everything else, like, you know, obviously the costume's interesting, the set okay, but it's such a piss weak story with such little effort to have any rhyme or reason for anything. And then, I mean, is there anything good to be said about some of the choreography and the stunts and the fighting? Was it good? I'm not sure.
No,
I saw some swords. I saw some people running and falling and being stabbed. But was it good?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like this was a problem with the actual Conan film that Richard Fleischer did, Conan the Destroyer, which was the shitty sequel to the first one. Mm. It's been a while since I watched it, but I seem to remember thinking, like, there's no connection to any of the action that's going on. There's no visceral feel to any of it. I don't feel engaged when the actual action sequences are happening.
It's because with a sword fight, if you're going to do it practically rather than, I don't know, animated or something, you just have to, it's just two, you know, either choreographed actors or stunt people hitting swords against each other. It's like, you put your sword here and I'll hit it. You put your sword here and I'll hit it. And it's like, well, a real sword fight has to be two people actually trying to hit each other with swords, not the swords themselves.
A lot of it is also the, you know, in a film, whenever there's a sword fight, a lot of what makes it work is the way it's shot. Like, it's a mix of choreography and technique when it comes to actually shooting the sequence, because you have to cut it together in such a way that it looks a lot more intense than it obviously is. It's the same as doing, like, a car chase. You know, most of the time when you film a car chase, the cars are going at 3 miles an hour, and the way you film it is what makes it look fast and intense, unless you're William Friedkin and it's French Connection, where you just put Gene Hackman in a car and in New York and go, yeah, no, just drive at 70 miles per hour the other way through traffic. It's fine.
Yeah, but, exactly. There are different ways to get action sequences to work, but the way that this does it is everyone sort of do their little bits where they fight and we'll film it and that's
it. Yeah, and the probably the biggest example of why the action not working in this film is the sword fight between Arnold's character and Red Sonja to determine whether or not he gets to fuck her, which was like...
I would say their fight, right? Because the idea being that not quite Conan wants to fuck her, but Red Sonja's... She's a rape survivor.
Like it's a bit not okay.
She's not great with men because men have put their willies in her without her permission and killed and burnt her village. So fair enough. Yeah. But her sort of I don't know if it says it on a Tinder application, but basically if you want to fuck her, you have to beat her in combat. That's kind of what rapists did in the first place, really, Sonja.
You
should wine and dine me if you want to sleep with me, is what she needs to realise.
I mean, whenever that scene started and there was the whole, like, you know, that suggestion that he would have to beat her in a fight, at first I was like, oh, fuck, I know what's going to happen now. Like, he's either going to... When he put his sword to her throat... And I thought, is he just going to force himself on her? And because it's a fantasy film and from the mid-80s, we're going to have to pretend that's fine. But then they started fighting, and then I was like, okay, well, this fight is a bit shit, and also I'm worried he's going to win. I liked that neither of them won.
They tired themselves out, and they kind of have a draw, don't they? And they don't sleep with each other straight away. Yes. It's also, they have a kiss at the end, because it's like a kid's...
And again, I was like, I'm not, you know, she doesn't really need to have a love interest. Like, it's kind of unnecessary. It's like how in every fucking Batman film, they have to give him a love interest for no reason. Like, no... Can we just focus on the fact that he's a fucking broken sociopath?
Yeah, he's not good with dealing with his life and problems because he dresses up like a bat and beats up people to try and make his parents come back to life. He's insane. He's not going to be banging Catwoman or Poison Ivy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But like, and it's the same thing here. It would probably be better if she just didn't have a love interest, or if they were just equals and there was no... Again, I compare everything to Mad Max Fury Road now. Yeah. That's my high watermark for all films. But, like, you have a very good arc of the relationship between Furiosa and Max in that film, and there is no romantic anything between them. Because that's not what it's about.
No.
And I felt like that's what it should have been in this, but at the same time, this was, you know, 1985 or whatever, but you could have had Arnie and Bridget Nielsen's characters... just be equals and have it about them helping each other, but not this pointless thing. Although I do like that he still doesn't beat her, even though they insist on having, you know, the sword fight thing come up again at the end.
It's good that they draw, and it's good that he never wins, but then, you know, her giving in is like, the reason they love each other, I guess, is because they've been there for each other, they fought side by side, and she respects him and can see that he's not a villain. That's fine. But the sword fight, I guess, the fact that it's not very interesting is partly because they probably don't want to actually kill each other. So I can understand them not quite going for the kill. Whereas in the scenes with the baddies, right? So like the one for me that's a good example of a terrible fight is the climactic fight, the Evil Queen, who we haven't talked about very much, but Red Sonja takes on the Evil Queen in her candle-filled lair, and they have a big fight, and the room's being torn apart. But it's literally, the way she finally defeats her is... hit her with a sword, hit her with a sword, hit her with a sword. She keeps blocking, and eventually she just gets tired and just gets cleaved. And it's like, all Red Sonja does is bludgeon her with a sword, which, fair enough, that's what barbarians do. But there's no drama to it. Even when, like, other characters get involved, they just get trapped under rocks. And then Red Sonja's like, I'll just keep fighting her, and I'll save you after, yeah? Like, there's no dramatic tension, really.
She teleports
around a bit because she has a shit wizard who... Actually, we got to talk about this wizard guy. How is he so shit and yet so powerful?
This fucking Ming the Merciless-looking guy.
With his little, like Paul Daniels magic trick lab that he takes. Like, there's just a creepy-looking Ming the Merciless wizard that works for this evil queen, and he's just got a little side table like a caboodle or something with his potions and gubbins and whatnot, and he does little tricks where he can seemingly slash a dish full of something or other, and then Red Sonja gets a small cut and she's like, ow, and then she does it again and it's, ah, that's annoying. And but he can also make the queen teleport about and then needlessly just be smug. Doesn't teleport her like behind Red Sonja so she can stab her in the back, but just out of the way and be like,
yeah, they do the whole classic. It's like when the villain holding James Bond hostage and telling him the entire plan rather than just fucking shooting him in the face. Like, if he can do all this stuff, if he's slashing her from a distance, just
slash
do that.
Head off.
Yeah, or think about like the inside of her brain and like
maybe just if you know, fair enough. Maybe he can just like a voodoo doll just do a little bit of something to her. Maybe the eyeball, so she's blind and therefore can't fight. Not to be sadistic, but this, and then all that happens is Red Sonja goes, "Oh, there's a wizard over there standing with his crafts table. I go smash him up and smash it up as well. Burr, 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 smash, smash, smash. Fuck you, buddy." Like, and that's solved. You know, like,
she cuts his head off, which then goes directly up into the air again.
Bad ass. But that's the only drama, really, is there's a bit of teleporting, but it comes to nothing, and then Sonja beats the woman through blunt force. I have to save my friend, because she sorts it all out afterwards. So for me, that's the worst action sword fight, because it's so crap. Like, some of the other ones, there's so much going on. Like, there's lots of little mini pointless stories, because it's a quest, so you have to go on needless like tangents when you, like, what was the one where she goes to loads of armored men and wants some help, and they're like, yeah, but you gotta pay.
Yeah.
You gotta pay with your vagina.
That's Pat Roach. That's the guy I was talking about from the Indiana Jones film.
Who was he as a character? Like, what? Just some.
He's called fucking. He's called Burke or something. I don't know.
He was a Burke.
She walks in and then he says, "Yeah, I'll help you, but clearly because you're a woman and I'm a big man with a beard, we have to have sex for me to help you." And she goes, "No." And he goes, "Well then." And then she kills him.
I like they establish that, like, Red Sonja's like, "Well, I'm outnumbered quite a lot here, but if I actually kill you, like you smugly think I won't, your men aren't going to attack me, are they?" And he's like, "No." And I reckon all the men should be like, "Yeah, fair enough, he did say, didn't he?"
Yeah.
Like, but they do attack, and she just sort of goes, "Oh, I guess I'll just easily get away. He's just going to go this way where they're not." Like a group of, I don't know, mercenary, freaky soldier men, and none of them can kill her. I assume lots of the time, Red Sonja is in trouble, and Arnie turns up and is like, "I'll help you, you useless woman."
Yeah, this is another problem, and I think... So, Arnie actually sort of... I can't even remember his fucking character's name. Conan.
Pretend Conan.
Yes. Conot. But he explains that, like, yes, you may be the lead character, but technically I'm the hero because of this prophecy or whatever shit. And then she just kind of accepts it. So then it's like, oh, so she's not even really... the hero. It's almost like the film has followed her by accident instead of him.
Well, he is a sidekick, but he does do literally a lot of the heavy lifting.
Yeah, and it's
let her shine in it, you know.
It's also the problem. It comes back to this, the pointless sort of love interest aspect as well. Is that yes, it is a female led action film technically. But there's this idea that she needs not Conan there to be the, you know, the man sort of holding her up kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, it's not really...
It just is on the line of this is annoying. But it's more, she's such a stubborn, you know, she doesn't want help. I mean, she wants help, from, you know, in a way, but she doesn't... She's so independent and strong, she doesn't think she needs friends to help her. And so having a bunch of people she's become allies with helping her, and that's, you know, it's necessary to her success as a warrior. Like, I understand the, characters are helping her, that's fine.
Yeah.
And that's just about where it goes. It doesn't quite go into... You know, it's not like... Arnie's not like Hulk Hogan, like, grandstanding and making all the other wrestlers look shit by stealing the sunshine. This is very much Red Sonja and friends. But he's fake Conan is just... are you trying to steal the limelight here?
Yeah, he's a little bit too patronising in...
Sometimes, yeah.
Why is he
even in this, right? He's in this because he was going to the funky temple. We come in on it where it's like a bunch of ladies in white clothes with weird helmets. Everyone has weird helmets. In white helmets are throwing away a magic device because, fuck it, it's hard work. This business. This magic thing is I think it's going to be... It's one of the few times where people have an amazing magical power and they go, this is dangerous. We're going to
throw it in what looks essentially like a magical bin.
Yeah, an abyss of some kind, a lavery abyss hole, and close it up. But, unfortunately, Evil Queen Lady, who... I don't know, she's heard about it, and it's like last minute come in with her army, and just be like mercilessly slaughters. It sets her up as a good baddie, because she's like, they defeat the lady warriors, you know, the kind of Amazonian style, I don't know if they're magical or anything.
Priestesses
with swords, they fight back against these brutish men and women and stuff as well, so there's a bit of action, and they lose, and then the dudes are like, what should we do with the prisoners, queen or whatever? And she's like, in the freaky pit.
Yeah.
Chuck them in the pit and close it up all nice. Like, I like the way she took the like key to opening the magical hole and chucks it in after them so that when it closes, that's it. They're sealed forever. So it's a nice villainous character to set up at the start.
Yeah, I mean, she's... like, as the villain, she's fine. I feel like... they could have let her do more. Just, I don't necessarily think they should have gone in and given her more of a, you know, a backstory or more depth or anything. I think she very much serves the purpose of being a tyrant. Like, she looks cool.
She's got, like, I mean, she, for whatever reason, decided to burn the village of Red Sonja. And Sonja, like, gives her the scar by hitting her with some melee weapon. So she's got this special, like, weird, like, she's got the crown, but it's got an extra bit of, like, weird mask that covers the scars.
Fancy opera mask, yeah.
Yeah, and I like what they're going for. She's got an image, she's got a cruel gimmick, and she's got a magical thing. So there's enough... We don't need huge backstory. Well, she's an evil queen. She has a thing. She's doing her thing, you know?
There is one aspect of her that is almost interesting, except they use it to make her more of a villain.
Go on.
And it's the hint that she may be gay, and it's used as like, isn't she weird and evil? And like, it's probably something that dates this film. It may be something from the source material, I don't know. But it's
she takes all these priestesses hostage, and like, she's got a few of them left that aren't killed. She's like, she was gay. Well, force them to be in my harem or something, isn't it? Like, make a figure.
That's what she was doing, or at least that's the strong implication.
But why she throws them symbolically in the hall, so...
Well, that's what she wanted Sonja for at the start. Like, she wants to claim her.
I just think there's an inconsistency. She's wasting attractive women sometimes, and then other times she's like...
And she's looking at that topless one in her weird TV thing that she's got. With the topless man that just, like, pulls some levers and turns it on. That's really weird. And the problem with that is it introduces the idea that she may be a lesbian and then does nothing with it and continues to paint her as evil. So the whole lesbian aspect just seems like something else being used to make the audience feel uncomfortable with her.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be used, should it?
I mean, it's also, you know, it's hard to not think about that in, like, 2018 terms, when you remember it's a low budget fantasy film from the mid 80s. Yeah.
It's not that huge a point either. It's sort of, that's what my problem is. It's the make a thing of it. You know, part of the reason she wants to keep Red Sonja alive and not just have her, one of her men kill her, is I guess she's pissed off that she's got this hideous scar, so she wants to exact revenge on Red Sonja more particularly. Like, she wants to do it herself, or she wants to be particularly mean or whatever. So I'm all right with her. I mean, the acting again was like, do you want to do more than just read the lines? I mean,
she
wasn't terrible all the time, but a lot of the time it was like, come on, do another take.
Almost going like full over the top, but never quite does. And I feel like she should have.
It doesn't need to be great acting. It needs to be appropriate emotions and reactions. It's not. I'll have a happy Flash Gordon's really over the top. But it's fun because everyone's camp and caricatured and odd. And, like, this was just, well, you're not making it realistic and you're not making it fun.
Yeah,
and
that's, I mean,
you're just sort of blankly saying words.
It's generally, I think, the problem with the film is that they didn't decide on whether they wanted to make it something sort of
camp or thrilling.
Yeah, because I would say the original Conan, as grim as it is, like Conan the Barbarian, as grim as it is and as violent as it is, it's pretty campy as well.
Yeah,
like,
it's corny and fun, isn't it, as well? Yeah.
But this is just kind of flat. And there's elements of that campiness in it, mostly with the Emperor and his servant. Like, that's where some of that tone comes out a little bit more. Yeah. But the rest of the film doesn't have it very much, so I kind of feel like a lot of the performers weren't entirely sure what they were, you know, really going for.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of work to do. You know, it's a hard task. You know, they've got to be looking good and performing all the stunts and choreography. There's a lot for them to do physically, so they're working hard despite, you know, that the acting is shit, but they were doing other things. They were working out every day. They were doing the choreographed routines. They had a lot to learn and do and perform, but there was nothing from a sort of acting point of view. So
I think the costume design actually does sum up the problems with the film as well, because it's a lot of effort went into the costume design, but with no direction, so it's fucking all over the place.
Yeah. There's lots of... The other thing with it is the story as well. So you can get away with a bit of bad acting occasionally if the story is gripping enough. Like, but there's lots of just dicking around. Like, you know, Jason and the Argonauts has lots of story elements where, well, this is just Jason and his fighting various people with his men, and this is another monster. Like, but those are fun, engaging films. Like, Clash of the Titans is really good because there's creativity, and it doesn't matter that some of the quest elements don't have anything to do with the overall journey. They're just obstacles along the way. And then there's loads of bullshit, like, oh, this is the bit where the Emperor wants to... Like, the Emperor kid wants to have a jewel from a lakey bit they're in, and the fat servant guy gets it out, but that somehow causes a lake monster to attack them.
Oh, the fucking mechanical monster.
Oh, but what, like, they just dick around trying to fight a fish monster, and it's like, why? Why is this happening?
And again, that's another sequence that, like, it demonstrates the poorly done action in the film, because that sequence could be, you know, you could have a lot of tension in there, you could have some pretty good action if you go the Jaws route and show less of that thing,
or
then
do
it's
something
gonna...
interesting, like they have to somehow think their way out of a problem rather than everyone just jump in and we'll slash it enough with swords until we win.
And it just, and those are the parts of the film that just, that's when it starts to feel like it's dragging, even though it's only an hour and 29 minutes.
Yeah, like the scene, for example, where the big sculpture hand, so in the ruined village where they meet the Emperor for the first time, he's stuck on a giant hand and his servant is trying to awkwardly get him down, and he's getting a mouthful from the Emperor for doing a shit job. And so Sonya has to solve it, and all she does is sort of spin it round so that one kid can get off, and then I guess spin it, hold it down so the fat guy can get off. And then, you know, she sort of she's proved herself in front of the Emperor. She finds out who they are as characters. But fundamentally, it was just a stupid dicking around on a sculpted hand. I guess it's an okay way to come in on characters, but there's no, like, oh, so do we stay in the ruined city and help people? No. We just fuck off.
Yeah, she just passes through, like,
without doing anything other than, like, she helps one, and then later on, like, some, again, another weird-hatted bloke has got the Emperor tied up, and they're, like, some robbers or thieves or whatever are threatening the Emperor, and then, you know, Sonya and possibly Faye Conan turn up and free him and kill the guy and stuff, and it's like, yeah, so, okay, you've met enough times to be part of the same quest, but nothing in the drama and the little stories that they tell, they're all irrelevant to what's going on.
There's no...
It's not like the Queen has anything to do with these random encounters. It's like she doesn't own the lake monster or the puzzle where they, you know, fuck up and get unleash the beast. And she doesn't, like, she's causing the storm in like some of the cities and is wrecking places and she's becoming more powerful. But a lot of the peril that Red Sonja and all them are in, nothing to do with her, really.
It's just, it feels like they didn't have a completed script when they shot the film, so they just sort of patched it together as they went.
They pulled some bits out of a bag, or, like, they asked a few people who played D&D what kind of things happen. They just scribbled a few notes down. Or they looked at a few pictures in comic books and go, oh, we'll just film that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's actually another element of it that stands out as sort of emblematic of what the problems overall with it are, is the music is by Ennio Morricone, the guy who did the music for, you know, Sergio Leone's...
Yeah. He's got really fond of trumpets in this, didn't he? Like, lots of fanfares.
Yeah, but, like, for someone who is known for so many very unique and very big scores, like the stuff he did with Sergio Leone and everything, the music he did for this is incredibly forgettable and pedestrian.
There's a few catchy moments where people are just riding horses and you're like, oh, that song's a bit fun,
but like if
but
you
then
look
there's
at
nothing to it, it doesn't add, yeah, it doesn't it, add any tension to anything.
If you look at something like Once Upon a Time in the West, where he makes a big part of the score of that film is that everyone in the film has their own unique theme, and then he weaves them all together as the story progresses.
And the music helps to create the drama and tension occasionally. And whereas in this, it's just there to be noise for when moments are boring, which is a lot of moments.
And I always feel like that's a really good way to see where, you know, the music is a lot more important to a film than just, you know, John Williams coming up with a memorable theme. Like, it's part of the tapestry of the film, however it's done or not done on purpose, if that's the case. But in this, it's like, well, we need to have some music. And then they got Ennio Morricone, didn't tell him anything. And he went, oh, well, I don't know, I'll just...
Here's the music, then.
I guess, yeah. He just, like, scribbled it on the back of a coaster or something, and they're like, yeah, I'll do.
Everything is sort of slapped together, isn't it? Like, whether it's motivation for characters, oh, there we go, she was trained by an Asian man for some reason. I don't know why he did. There was no tension, there was no, I'm not going to train a woman. There was no, well, I owe it to your family, so I will. There was no reason for anyone to do anything. Like, literally, fake Conan turns up and goes, I happen to fucking... Oh, yeah. Your sister was escaping the, like, you know, all the priestess women who were trying to throw away the MacGuffin. She escapes, gets an arrow in the back, doing a kind of, what's that bit at the end of Krypton Factor where they go down, like, they do that wire thing. And Arnie, like, pulls a fucking arrow out of her and is like, what's up? What's wrong with you? What's going on? And then he goes to find Red Sonja because that's what she wants. Like, tell my sister to fucking sort out the talisman thing. And he just turns up to wherever she's training and goes, "Your sister's dead. I'll show you now. Come with me." She's
very
like, okay.
And
then from then on, he's just like sexually attracted to her, so he occasionally turns up to save her and endears him self to her.
He's the nice guy. He's holding open doors for her and
holding up big rocks for people to climb under. That happens a lot. There's a lot of I'll just heave this up and that'll solve the puzzle. Like the elements towards the end where they're trying to get the queen and place like her power is, earthquakes are happening. There's green ball thing she's nicked can control weather at least and has power, so everyone is like, hang on bitch, you've the queen, evil queen lady, this is getting out of hand, maybe you should, those priestesses were probably right, this is very dangerous, maybe you shouldn't.
I like that her argument is no shut up. that's all she's got.
But the other element I don't understand about the green thing, so there's this magic powerful weather controlling orb. And but it doesn't like men. If men touch it, they disappear to where? What happens?
I think they're just obliterated. Like they're just gone.
I would like to think they're teleported somewhere more fun, like Candyland or something. They just wake up and they're in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, going oh, Oompa Loompas and chocolate everywhere. I like the scene where she like the queen's like, oh you blokey, touch that, and he's like, fuck it off, touch it. Oh shit, I have to touch it tonight. Oh, and then he disappears, and then she makes sure a woman can touch it, and it's like there's a little bit of tension with, like, obviously you know the woman's going to be fine because it would be boring. She just makes all of her servants touch it until she eventually goes, oh shit, they're all disappearing. So we're going to have to find gloves. But the women are fine when they touch it, they don't disappear to wherever. Why is that? Is this a weird. Is it because it's a woman film? Women are more important by.
I mean, yeah, that's one of the things that, like, fine, that's, you know, I get the conceit of the film is it's women are the, you know, it's
to this story.
Conan for girls, yeah, so that's something that...
It would be really awful if it was, imagine, like, a magical item in, like, another film, and, if women touch it, they explode. men, like how patronized it would be the other way, just only men can pull the sword from the stone and use the weapon, only men can have the special power, if women are too flimsy and weak, you would just be like, oh god, really? But this way around, it's empowering or something.
I mean,
arbitrary.
I mean, that's fine. My problem with the talisman thing is, what is it supposed to do? Like
definitely makes storms and weather stuff happen.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Who created it? Where did it come from? All we know is it's like the nuclear bomb. It's too much. It's too dangerous to use.
And I feel like it's...
And
you
even
know,
the bad guys are starting to go, fuck it, this thing's crazy. And it's pulling literally their area apart at the seams.
Yeah. I mean, I usually don't care if there's a story element like that, you know, MacGuffin. I hate fucking saying that now because it's like everyone on the internet has learned that word and uses it too much.
Yeah,
but,
isn't it? Like,
you know, that's...
Hitchcock just made it up as a term to explain
that's what it is. Like, the talisman is pretty much the definition of that. And it doesn't need an explanation necessarily, but the problem is because very little in this film has anything.
Everything is so ill-defined. It doesn't matter what it is. They don't explain anything.
Yeah, I just want something.
Yeah, how much magic is real? Is the sorcerer... Why doesn't the sorcerer want to wield it? Like, I don't...
Why is he so indifferent to it?
Like, I guess she's just a really boss queen. Like, she's obviously previously proven herself to be one tough cookie. And no one will fuck with her. And so everyone's like, yep, you win. And so, fair enough, that's cool. She got a reputation for being merciless and harsh and successful, and everyone's obedient. But all it amounts to is she goes power mad and has to be defeated by our random assortment of people who've met and have gotten over some stuff together. And then they just sort of... There's a bit of comedy where, like, people fall down drain pipes and smash into tables and, you know, there's a little bit of comedy fighting and a little bit of serious, oh my god, they're going to hurt each other fighting. But fundamentally, there's just lots of sliding and being pulled under heavy things. Like, running around in corridored areas. And, there's in the throne room, where they're briefly in, the queen's servant, who's sort of a side character woman, she is used to sort of sucker in Red Sonja and is like, Red Sonja is like the one who turns up, and she's like, she weirdly I think is deliberately bad acting. Like, she's pretending to be a character that can't act very well, I think. And
luring
in Sonya just so the Queen can, like, sneak up on her and then squander that opportunity.
Sneak up on her and then not do anything.
Yeah, but all it amounts to is people dick around fighting for a bit and eventually they're defeated and our heroes, you know, they squish people under doors and escape under the slidey... Like, there's lots of, we'll just lift the gate up and sneak in and...
Yeah.
And then lift up the gate again and it's just... And lift up also, the rock and open the door, which is a big stone. There's lots of heavy... lifty shit that happens at the end.
It's important to have a pit of lava as well, because it's the mid-80s. Like, yeah. There has to be a pit of lava for somebody to fall into.
At least they did shut off Fake Conan, like, and also the fat guy with the big bone up that looks like it's made of paper, as you said.
Yeah, they don't have them swoop in and help Sonya.
They're kept at bay, so she proves herself to be a worthy hero of sorts.
And I feel like the way she defeats the Queen, the idea is good. It just doesn't.
It looks boring.
It's not executed well. Yeah, because the idea of her like losing her shit and attacking her until she breaks her sword and then just stabs her. You could do that really well, they just don't.
Yeah, I guess the whole point is she's like a barbarian warrior. Yeah. She isn't. You know, I'm not saying she has to use her intellect or whatever, but it looks boring. It just, yeah. Defeating the villain is fine. It's just, there's so much faffing around in this film. And none of it is done with compelling acting. Occasionally funny, mostly just, what's this for now?
Yeah, I mean, if you're padding a...
Not
1 hour and 29-minute film, then you should probably go back and do another draft, maybe two drafts of the script before you film it.
Yeah, I mean, if the acting was stronger, it would still be a pretty run-of-the-mill action sword and sandals thing, but you might enjoy watching it. But this one, it was just so fucking...
Yeah,
God.
It's I after a while I wished it was worse.
So it would be funny.
And that's the thing. Like, there's not really any humor intentionally or unintentionally. It's just as a film. It's just sort of there.
There's some bad kiddie humor, like from mainly the fat servant and stuff. But the emperor and the servant characters. They at least have something to them. And there's Arnie's all right. Arnie's, you know, there's nothing wrong with what he's doing, but he's not bringing a huge lot to the table. He's not really important. He's just there as a character to make up the numbers and to be a love interest.
It's, you know, this was fairly early still in his career as an actor in, you know, Western.
Yeah.
Movies and stuff, and this was the year after the first Terminator, but like the first Conan film and the original Terminator were two films early on that really played to his strengths. He could use his foreignness in Conan to the benefit of that character, and then in Terminator people always make fun of Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he's genuinely fucking great in that first Terminator film.
Well, it's two characters who are not about long dialogue and...
Yeah, but at the same time, it's two very different characters.
But you want an actor who could turn up on time, be masculine and intimidating, and that's not... Like, Arnie isn't... If you're going to have Red Sonja, who's a barbarian, you kind of don't want a character like Conan to turn up. You need a different kind of... If you're going to have another male love interest or another male character in there, have it be someone different to Sonja, not similar. Two people who can't articulate very well.
He doesn't entirely play it as Conan. It's
not... He's more... That's why you need a different actor, because...
Yeah.
You have someone who's like more complicated than Conan,
This was a problem with the second Conan film as well, from the same director. I feel like Arnold was told don't play it like, you know, the same way you played Conan. And then Arnold would maybe ask, what do you mean? And then they would just not answer.
And they'd go, wear this jacket.
Yeah.
Wear this, like, brown vest. There you go.
I feel like either they should have had a different actor play an entirely different character, or just fucking have Conan and have it be two barbarians that bond through, like, similar experiences.
Yeah, or like, Conan, if Conan was in it, he could be shown, like, he obviously take his masculinity and his sense of entitlement, and he'd be he'd be outmatched on the battlefield by Sonya, but also he could perhaps learn a lesson about how sometimes women are just objects that you fuck and throw away. Like, part of Conan's thing is, you know, women are objects to him to some extent.
Yeah.
And he should be shown up that sometimes strong women come along that can match you, you know, like, and then he could learn a lesson. But this guy's just helpful man.
I mean, again, not to keep harping on it, but it's another good example of that, the fourth Mad Max relationship of Max and Furiosa, in that they're both very similar characters, but with different motivations. Like, Max is a survivor, who's lost everything, and Furiosa is a survivor who's lost everything, but whereas Max shuts himself off and refuses to connect or help with anyone, and Furiosa, that's her purpose. And again, it's this, you know, you could have the same thing here. So you could have a character like Red Sonja and Conan be the same, like, similar characters, but with different motivations, who then learn things from each other, but also don't necessarily have to want to fuck each other, because fuck's sake.
But it is just, we're both the same, muscly people with swords and are good at fighting.
Well,
and, yeah, you know, like, there's nothing... This film, I don't know, is there any point? Because
I mean,
it's badly
all...
acted, don't watch it, that's it. Like, badly acted. A lot of... The sad thing is, there was a lot of quality in it, but it was all squandered and, like, wasted. An opportunity... It could have been a very good film, and instead it's rubbish and just sort of... It wastes good map paintings of funny-looking monster bridges, and it wastes interesting skeleton... heavily skeleton-based set designs.
Yeah.
And, like, loads of... There's loads of cool bits and, like, funky, like, throne rooms and red-floored Ming the Merciless-style lairs and epic vistas and things.
The candle room was great, I will say. That was probably my favourite set, was the candle room.
I feel like someone criticize how many candles there were.
Yeah, her like second in command guy, Icol, says maybe fewer candles.
That felt that felt like an observation from, like, Family Guy or something, where they were spoofing it. It didn't feel like it should have. I was partly like, did that happen, or did I just sarcastically think that happened?
No, did I say that?
Did I think that? No, but the character actually makes a point of, well, it's a bit stupid, isn't it? And time and effort and danger, potentially. It's a hazardous, idiotic thing, a big candle room. It's like, I want lots of light. So, like, does she get all womanly and be like, look, I got a thing about interior design and I like the candle room. We're keeping the candles, right? Fuck you.
Yeah.
But there's loads of stuff that's good about it. It's just, they did a terrible, shit, boring film and they didn't do anything with the actors. It's that simple. The acting was bad. The story was meh. The rest of it cannot make a good film on its own.
It doesn't, I mean, it's only... It's sort of a relic of when this kind of genre was all the fucking rage in the 80s, and everyone was trying to capitalize on that first Conan film and how well it did.
But trying to capitalize on... People are trying to cynically make something that will do well, but they're not.
Yeah.
They don't come at it with, I have a passionate story I want to tell about Red Sonja. No one was coming into this going, I have the perfect story about a woman raped and pillaged.
Yeah,
and,
it's like, you know, it's not like someone said, oh, I've thought for a long time that Red Sonja could make a great movie. Now's the time. It's
Lady Conan, anyone? Really
well. What else have we got?
Yeah.
let's
do Lady Conan. Let's do it, because tits will sell and swords. Everyone likes tits and swords, yeah? Done.
I would like to see this remade now
with
in like
enlightened cool millennials coming at it from a women's lib perspective.
The post you know, post Wonder Woman revival.
It could definitely be revisited, and but who cares? We're not reviewing one that doesn't exist. This one, Jamie. What metaphor would we sign off on? You know, if you have got any other bits you thought, oh, I forgot to mention, now's the time. But no, do you have a metaphor?
I do have a metaphor. It was a struggle to really
watch
come
film.
Up with much to talk about. Yeah, because it was like,
fuck, you know.
There's
lots of weird bits that don't make sense. So it's basically pointing it. We basically pointed a bit going, yeah, did that have any sense? I don't think so, did it? Would that have any rhyme or reason? No, it's pretty stupid and for no reason, wasn't it? Yeah, that's all it is. It's like loads of shit happened and it was random and dumb.
No, it was a struggle to sort of pull anything interesting from it. Like, it's... There's not a lot going on. But as for a metaphor, it's kind of like hearing some kids play D&D for the first time, but like from the other room. So you're only like hearing them try and like ad-lib ideas while you're like half doing the ironing or the dishes or something. Like, you're not really paying full attention. And when you do, you're like, oh, fuck, I'm not listening to this. Like, this is embarrassing. I'm going to pretend I can't hear it.
Oh, dear. Yeah, it is a bit like that. It is just, like, a little bit embarrassing and a bit odd and a bit... I don't know. I think sometimes the trouble with D&D is it's quite a sad activity, but I always feel a bit like I can't enter into it in the genuine way that people do. I have to be sort of sarcastic and a bit more. All my characters feel like they should be in like Futurama or something. They're never like earthly trying. I've never attempted to actually play properly.
Yeah, it would be like playing D&D with you, and I feel like I would be the same. Like, it would be like someone watching that Matt Groening show, Disenchantment, and being disappointed because it's a genuine fantasy.
It's hard to enter into the genre earnestly, and this one, it just smacks of this is lame, guys. It's just a good example. If people go, oh, but if you get into fantasy and adventure, it can be really cool and interesting, and it can really change your life and make you think differently, and it's a really great. And that's the thing is, D&D can make people more imaginative, and people can have fun, and it can be fun and cool. But things like Red Sonja come along and go,
this proves
that it's a load of old shit and stupid. This is a lame example of how not to make people like the geekier side of culture. I need one. What can I say about it that we haven't said already in a metaphor? It is like watching... Okay, it's like watching... I don't know if this is a thing, but if you're studying a foreign language and you're in school or whatever and you're learning French or German or whatever, and you have to do like a test where you prove that you've learned some stuff. So to prove you've learned the new language, in this case English, some foreign students have learned English and they're proving all the English they learned by putting a Swords and Sandals production on to give an example of all the English phrases they've learned. And they've oddly got a huge budget from the art students have helped and have made some cool sets. And the foreign students have come in to show off their English language and they've put together this and you go, well, I guess you do know English phrases.
I mean, you made something.
Well done, everyone. I'm not sure I understood it or enjoyed it, but I will give you a pass. You did speak English. Well done. That's much better than I know at your language. Well done, everyone.
Just to, not spend an entire podcast knocking on Richard Fleischer, he did actually make good films as well. Like, he's not defined by Red Sonja and Conan the Destroyer. He made... he's dead. He made Soylent Green, so he gets Soylent quite Green a pass. It's a sci-fi film, and the twist is that Soylent Green, which is this renewable source of food, is made from people. That's what people know. He also made a movie called Tora, 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 which is a really... he has good films, you know, in his catalogue, so... Unfortunately, he also has Amityville 3D and then Conan the Destroyer and this, but whatever.
But yeah, we you know, there you go. We struggled through Red Sonja. I've gabbled together some thoughts. What more do you want from us? What are we supposed to make gold out of this shit? No, we tried, Jamie. We tried. The other guys, they missed out. They could have enjoyed a really bad film. Oh, well. Lucky them. Podcast over. Sword slash. Head falls off.
Touch the talisman and the episode will disappear.
Oh, that's what Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I wish I could have touched that through this. I was just trying to touch the screen, like, please make me disappear. I'll go where he went, I don't care. Yeah, anyway.
Bye.
Bye.